This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Newell getting a little time off. I'm Dave Cohen. Glad to be with you today. And we want to jump right in because Peter King is joining us on the live line, CBS News correspondent in Florida. Peter, we know what you're going through right now. Where are you and are you starting to get a good sense? It takes a little while after a hurricane to really know the impacts.
Well, nobody knows more about this than you do, Dave, but I'm in Orlando. I'm fine. Our home is fine, and I'm very thankful for that. The storm could have been a lot worse than it was. It did not quite live up to expectations, but still, you know, heavily damaging. The storm surge was lower than expected, but any storm surge is bad. And it was, we are told, at least the worst of it was in Sarasota County, just south of the Tampa Bay area. And there is a great deal of flooding all the way up and down the coastline and here inland where we've got a lot of lakes and rivers. And same thing is happening as the storm goes out to sea in the Atlantic coast, the Space Coast, the Treasure Coast, Volusia County as well, all getting a bit of that. There's a great deal of damage down to power lines, as always, trees, the whole nine yards. We have more than 3 million customers without power. St. Petersburg is dealing with a series of water main breaks, so they don't have any running water over there, and it's a tough, tough situation.
Yeah, and we're really just starting to get the picture often with these things. You know, the first 12, even 24 hours, we don't really know the impacts because so many communities are cut off. And it was interesting hearing interviews this morning with county officials and others. They only know what's happening literally in their own backyard because it's so overwhelming. And when asked, well, how are things in neighboring counties? Like, well, we don't know. We haven't talked to them because we're focusing on what we've got. So it takes a while to find out. But I guess the good news is that they underestimated the power of that dry air near the coast that really took some of the punch out of Milton before it made landfall, and it didn't make a direct hit. The eye wall didn't go directly into Tampa Bay and trigger the feared massive flooding right along the coast there from the surge.
Okay, I can't add much more to that.
they were really scared, though, that Tampa Bay could have seen really historic flooding, and I guess that's what a lot of the media are focused on today is the fact that they thought Tampa Bay may end up under 15 feet of water. The good news is that did not happen.
Well, absolutely right, and, you know, it was a legitimate concern, but, you know, these storms, they seem to have minds of their own. They power up quickly. They power down sometimes a little bit. They take turns. And, you know, we're just, I think everybody's thankful that it didn't score a direct hit on Tampa Bay. But that said, you know, Sarasota County is nothing to sneeze at area and that's either. And that's a heavily populated area, too. So those folks who got the direct hit, you know, they're dealing with it. Tampa Bay is still dealing with a great deal of storm surge and flooding as well, Dave. Don't underestimate that.
You know, when we had Helene come ashore, it was in a largely undeveloped, less populated area of the Big Bend. We knew that Milton was going to hit somewhere where there's a lot of beachfront and inland development, and obviously going right over you there in Orlando. What are you hearing about the big tourist attractions in Orlando? Folks have trips scheduled over there in terms of what kind of damage they may have to deal with and when everything may get back up and running.
Well, if they were coming here today, they're going to be in airplanes that go nowhere because the airport is still closed. The attractions are still closed. They're all doing damage assessments and making sure that it's safe for people to come here. But I can I can pretty much assure you that they will do everything to get everything back online quickly because they want that tourist traffic. And, you know, we're waiting to hear from Disney, Universal, and all the rest of the attractions, and you know, more importantly, from Orlando International Airport officials as they do their damage assessments.
A lot of people were surprised in the pre-coverage of this storm that we have, it's been a long time since we've seen a hurricane make a direct hit in the Tampa area and go right over the Orlando area and the Space Coast. Do you remember another storm kind of taking any similar path to this one? And if so, how long ago was that?
Well, it's been 100 years since a direct hit on the Tampa Bay area, but we've had two big hurricanes go over Orlando in the past 20 years or so. Hurricane Charley back in 2004, Hurricane Irma in 2017. My house was in the bullseye for those and for three other hurricanes in 2004 that season. Before Katrina, a year before Katrina, that season we had four hurricanes in 6 weeks.
My goodness. Yeah. And, you know, Florida just hanging out there between the Gulf and the Atlantic, obviously far more likely to get hit because you got it coming from both sides. Peter King, anything else you would like to share with our listeners this morning before we let you run?
Well, always great to be on with you, Dave, and I'm sorry that it always seems to be a hurricane when you and I talk.
Yeah, and I do owe you some oysters. Last time you were here, you brought us, you went and picked up a whole bunch of charbroiled oysters and brought them into the radio station, so.
Oh, my God, that was like 14 years ago.
Next time I'm down your way, I'll have to find some, well, I don't know if there's any comparable way, but something close to return the favor.
I'll tell you, my wife loves oysters, and you will become her new best friend if you do that.
Can you get charbroiled oysters in Orlando?
You know, that's a good question. Haven't looked in a while.
All right. Peter, glad that your house and you are all right. Glad that Tampa didn't get the worst-case scenario, but our thoughts and prayers, of course, remain with everyone who is impacted. We know we're going to find out today and in the coming days about some communities that have been severely devastated by this hurricane. And even though it wasn't the worst-case scenario, that for some people, it is very tragic.
Yeah, absolutely right. And you know what? Before I go, I'll remind you of this. You're always going to hear a lot about the coast because the coast is a sexy dateline. But there are a lot of smaller communities inland that you never hear about that probably got slammed. So, you know, perhaps think about those folks.
Yeah, and no one was set up with the reporters and the cameras and everything else in some of those communities that got hit by tornadoes yesterday because that wasn't anticipated. And you're right, all of the big media go to the coast, go to Tampa Bay, go to where they expect the most dramatic stories to come from, but other communities are hit very hard and often get very little coverage. So
that's right.
I know that you will help highlight those, and we will be, of course, looking to help them as well. You got hundreds of Louisianians already in your neck of the woods now, from our National Guard to the Cajun Navy to Urban Search and Rescue from here, there to help out, and as well as electrical workers. So hopefully they can get y'all back on your feet as quickly as possible.
And I can say that everybody truly appreciates the help.
Thank you, Peter. We look forward to your reports. We'll be hearing them on the CBS Radio Network.
All right, Dave, take care.
Good to talk to you. Peter King, live from Orlando, Florida. Yeah, you know, it's in situations like this where the buildup is so dramatic, where the warnings are so frightening, to be honest with you, about what could happen when it isn't as bad as feared. Many times people write it off and move on. But then when we start to learn the reality about what happened, just because it wasn't the worst case scenario, just because Tampa Bay isn't under 15 feet of water today and the entire, you know, landscape there devastated to a point where we start having conversations about how can they possibly recover from this, doesn't mean that there isn't devastation in many places. We know the death toll is rising. We know the damage is enormous, and we'll wait to just find out how bad. If you've seen the pictures from that collapsed crane that came down on a building, those are the dramatic pictures that you're like, wow. And, you know, just 2 months ago, I was in Tampa, went to see a baseball game between the Tampa Rays and the Miami Marlins at Tropicana Field. And I was sitting in there and looking at that roof, which is, it was a very thin kind of material, almost translucent. It let light in, and wondering, how has this stadium survived all these years? Well, it didn't. Last night, most of the roof was destroyed. And I know they're already breaking ground on and starting to build a new stadium, but I don't think they're supposed to be using that till 2027 or 2028. So it'd be interesting to see if they bother to fix the roof or just remove the roof and make Tropicana an outdoor stadium. I'm Dave Cohen in for Newell Norman. Your thoughts, 504-260-1870. Give us a holler on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line about the fact that, you know, remember just Helene. The fear was it was going to wipe some community off the map. Remember when it came ashore, but it hit the Big Bend in a largely unpopulated area. And initially everyone was like, wow, I mean, not so big a deal, until it got to North Carolina and washed away entire towns, roads, bridges, houses, cars, communities, just gone. The good news with Milton is it went over Florida and it's back in the Atlantic now and not supposed to threaten any more land. So at least there's some good news there. When we come back, I want to talk about credit card debt. Do you use credit cards? The average rate for a credit card now is something like 23% interest, and many of them are over 30%. Yet Americans are amassing record amounts of credit card debt despite the record high interest rates. We're going to talk to an economist about why that is and how this may be a huge ticking time bomb for our economy and for many people who are just piling on the credit card debt with no reasonable expectation of ever being able to pay it off. We'll have that conversation coming up. We'll also hear from the police chief. Today, one of the NOPD's officers responding to yet another report of someone breaking into a house uptown and stealing guns, confronted the burglar and shot him on State Street near Britannia. We'll find out more details about that as well. Here on the Newell Norman Show, I'm Dave Cohen on WWL. One person texts us on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line and says, Dave, the roof ripped off of Tropicana Field. Flashback of Katrina. Yeah, no doubt. When I saw that, it really did bring those memories rushing back. Now, that roof was far less substantial than the Superdome roof, and far more of it was ripped off of that field than was ripped off of the Superdome. And I was in August. I went and saw a game there, and I was looking at that going, how has a hurricane not taken this roof yet? Because that stadium's been there for years and years. And, well, I hope I didn't jinx it, because now it has happened. Somebody else texted in and says, with respect to what happened in Florida, they will be recovering from years. Heck, we're still recovering from Ida and Francine, and it'll be a while. Yeah, rarely do you get a hurricane that hits and you go, that was nothing. Someone is suffering after almost every hurricane. You know, thank God that it came ashore as a Category 3 and not as a Category 5 like it was out in the Gulf. But Katrina was a 3 when it hit here. And I know that the levee failures what really made it the huge catastrophe it was for greater New Orleans. But look at what happened in Mississippi on the Gulf Coast. That was a catastrophe regardless, and just unbelievable devastation there. And you still see the scars from Katrina if you drive along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. Earlier today, we heard on the police scanner, shots fired, shots fired. And my ears immediately perked up as I started hearing the details unfold of police responding to a burglary call on State Street in uptown New Orleans, in the block that intersects with Britannia. And they have been getting one call after another in that area of people breaking into occupied homes, mostly while the residents are asleep, and stealing guns. And even we have heard reports of entire safes being stolen. Well, it happened again this morning, and Police Chief Ann Kirkpatrick went to the scene to tell us what had happened.
We had a residential burglary alarm that came out for the 1200 block of State Street. That call came in to us at 5:27. That's when it came into communications as an alarm. At 5:30, the call was dispatched out to the field. Now, this is Captain Nolan. Captain Nolan is the commanding rank Army officer for District 2. They have experienced 5 prior burglaries within the last couple of weeks involving an MO just like this, where people have gone into the home and stolen guns. She had prepared her team of officers to saturate this area. So within 3 minutes, we had officers on the scene from the time the call came in. One of the officers or two of the officers actually engaged the suspect. And in the interim, the homeowner had gone to the next door and also called in and reported this burglary that was an occupied residence. So we had 2 calls come in. The officers did engage the suspect. There was shots were not exchanged, but the officer did shoot his weapon at the suspect. The suspect was hit. The suspect has been transported and is presently in being operated on. We do not have further information, though we've made a couple of calls into the hospital at this time. None of the officers are injured. What we can tell you is that we have recovered 4 shotguns from that house that had been burgled. And we do have present here, if you have a follow-up question, you already know the chief of the Field Operations Bureau, Chief Gantier. To my left is the lieutenant over the investigation, pardon me, and the investigation of the shooting as well. On all of these calls, we also automatically contact our Office of Independent Monitor. This is the deputy director right over to my shoulder here. We also have the federal monitor. This is Dr. Ross. She represents the federal monitoring team. So that is why we are have a whole team out here to do the investigation. As we get more information, we will give it to you. But right now, we know that this particular MO fits a minimum of 5 burglaries that have occurred in the district here. And we know that approximately 4 other burglaries that fit this MO in the adjoining district.
And we are waiting on an update to see if that suspect does survive after being shot by police this morning. But this would have been the 6th in just the last couple of weeks incident like this. We'll continue this conversation coming up throughout the program. And I'm curious your thoughts with the new NOPD approach to things. And you hear the chief say they had established a readiness, saturating that neighborhood with officers prepared for the next burglary, prepared for the next time someone broke into an uptown home and stole guns. Well, they were ready this morning, and they shot and wounded the suspect, who they say had at least 4 stolen guns from that home on State Street near Britannia on him. We'll continue this conversation coming up. For a while now, I have been increasingly concerned about the inflationary impact on people's budgets to an extent that we have had a problem in this country for a long time of people not living within their means. And I, as a young man, had that problem. I remember vividly when I was in college getting, you know, there were people set up at tables on campus who would literally want to hand you a credit card application and open a line of credit for you right there and then because they wanted to indoctrinate you into the use of credit cards. And at first I resisted and I didn't want credit cards because they just didn't. I said, if I have the money, I'll spend it. If I don't, I won't. But then I fell into the trap. I had to put a portion of a semester of tuition on a credit card because I had just run out of other options and I had to stay in school. I had to get my journalism degree. And so I put this massive amount at the time to me of money on my credit card to pay for my tuition, thinking, well, I'll just pay it off. Well, paying it off became very difficult because, well, life, right? And then it was like, well, I already have this much debt on a credit card. Why not swipe it again for a few beers, at, you know, when we all went out on a Friday night? Why not swipe it again for a nice dinner here or there? I already have this much debt. You know, oh, well, you want to go on a vacation? I don't have the money. All right. And I fell down that rabbit hole, and it was ugly. I'm at a point now in my life where you almost have to put a gun to my head for me to use a credit card and establish any more credit card debt because it was so difficult to get out of. Ali Bustamante is a UNO professor in the Department of Economics and Finance and joins us on the live line now. Professor Bustamante, thank you for being here on WWL.
Great. Thank you for having me.
My concerns have only been exacerbated lately because I keep seeing these reports that credit card interest rates are at record highs, never been higher, even while other interest rates are starting to come down with the Fed reducing the basis points of the interest rates, and then seeing reports that we have, as a nation, record amounts of credit card debt. So people are putting more money than ever on credit cards and paying higher interest rates than ever on credit cards. To me, this just seems like a massive ticking time bomb.
You're absolutely right about that. You're talking about $1.1 trillion in credit card debt that Americans have. And right now, when we think about the interest rate that is going into these credit cards, as you mentioned, it's at record levels right now. It's about 20.8%. And that is incredibly high in terms of, you know, when we look at the history of credit card rates, you know, just a few years ago, it was about 15%. Again, still very high, but nowhere near as high as it currently is.
Yeah, and that's the average at just over 20%. Many people are paying over 30% and not thinking anything of it. It used to be that if you were paying 30% interest, it was from a guy at a pub on the corner who was going to literally break your knees if you didn't pay him back, or it was from one of these payday loan places that you knew if you ended up at, you were one step from Skid Row. And now people don't think anything of 30% interest.
Yes, you're absolutely right. You know, it's, you know, there used to be laws really, you know, putting caps on interest rates in most states. You know, some of those have been loosened over time, as you mentioned. You know, payday lenders has been one of the reasons for that. But what we actually see right now is that when we think of the interest rate that credit cards are ultimately charging, there's three main factors that go into that: the federal funds rate, which is determined by the Federal Reserve, the prime rate, which is really determined by you know, borrowers' creditworthiness, and then there's a markup, basically the profit margin that is, you know, that is achieved by these credit card companies. And what we're seeing is really a perfect storm where the federal funds rate has been very high for, you know, several years. We just had a rate cut in September, as you mentioned. However, it's still about 4.75%. This is a much higher level than the near 0% levels that we had just a few years ago. But it's really that markup that despite the rate cut, that credit card company keep charging these kind of exorbitant high interest rates that are really leading to this credit crunch right now.
You know, if you look at your credit card statement when you get it, and it says you owe this amount, if you only pay the minimum payment, you'll be paying for 26 years to pay it off. And that's if you don't charge another dime to that card and only pay the minimum payment. And if you pay, you know, then they say X amount, you'll pay it off in 5 years or whatever it is on that statement. I don't know if people just don't read that now, especially with everything so digital. Maybe they never actually look at the real statements, or they just don't care. But that scares the crap out of me, knowing that you may be paying on this card for years and years and years. So that, you know, $10 po' boy you bought may end up costing you $100 before it's over.
You're absolutely right about that. And, you know, when you just mentioned your personal, experience with credit cards, that is really a cautionary tale. You know, when we think about things like student debt, right, student loans, the interest rate is about 6%. When you think about, home ownership, right, we have interest rates, you know, now they're still relatively high, closer to 7%. But these are just, you know, fractions considering, you know, the exorbitant cost of paying interest at 21%. Those are interest levels that are really, you know, really hard to get out from under.
So if we continue to see this trend where people, and someone just texted us on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text Line, says young people do not want to wait for anything. There are so many under 30-year-olds that are going to Italy on vacations and putting it on their credit cards, not to mention all of the other things that they want to buy, and they don't save money anymore. And I don't want to paint with a broad brush and say all young people are like that, but I think we are increasingly in a society of people who want to have very nice things and want immediate gratification at all times, and credit cards are an extension of that, and that's why we have record credit card debt now. But is it, how in the world can it be expected that these people are ever going to pay off all of this credit card debt that is so massive now after years and years of living above their means, unless they, you know, come into some serious money, get a huge job, promotion or new job that pays a whole lot more? How is it reasonably expected that this debt's eventually going to be paid off? And if it's not, what is that going to do to personal economies and our national economy?
And we're really seeing some of the evidence of that kind of, you know, downstream effects. Right now, the delinquency rate, you know, which is, you know, folks who are more than 3 months behind on their credit card payments, is about 11%. Just 2 years ago, it was 8%. And so we're talking about a lot of new folks falling behind on their credit card payments. They tend to be predominantly younger folks who have much higher rates of delinquency than older Americans. However, when we think of just the stickiness associated with these interest rates, you're absolutely right. It has to do with just these very high interest rate levels. The longer that they persist, really, the longer that they're going to become much more difficult to really unpack of a folks' finances.
Yeah, and I just envision this debt bomb just sitting there ticking for years and years and years and just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And at some point, you know, are we going to see just this massive wave of bankruptcies? Or at some point, do the lenders, the credit card companies, are they going to have to write off some of this debt? And what's that going to do to their profitability, to then their ability to lend, and to our economy as a whole? I'll let Ali Bustamante answer that question when we come back here on WWL. Do you use credit cards? Have you had a credit card with more than 20% interest? And does it scare you to swipe it? I think all of us intend to pay off the full balance every month at first, because you want those points, you want those miles, you want that cash back. But you end up paying a whole lot more than those miles, those points, and that cash back is ever going to be worth. We'll continue the conversation after this. You can jump in on the phone or on the text line, 504-260-1870, in the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Talking about the record credit card debt in the United States and record high credit card interest rates, Professor Ali Bustamante is our guest from UNO in the Department of Economics and Finance, and also in the Division of Business and Economic Research. And I was asking you, Professor, before we took our break, how do we get out of this hole that we are digging as an economy and as individuals? If we have record amounts of debt at record high interest rates, are we going to see record numbers of bankruptcies, net record numbers of people just stopping paying their credit cards, and record numbers of people with credit so bad they'll never be able to buy anything?
So the good news is that we actually haven't seen an uptick in bankruptcies yet. As I kind of mentioned a moment ago, you know, we have seen an uptick in delinquencies, which is really a warning sign what's very possible to come. The other good news, though, is that folks are really only using about 23% of their available credit card limits. And we've seen that pretty steady over the past 10 years. And so that really giving us a sense that it's not necessarily, many Americans who are amassing much more debt. It's really a case of new folks obtaining credit cards and really charging them in perhaps not necessarily having, as you kind of mentioned earlier, a complete understanding of what they're actually getting into.
So we're not seeing overwhelmingly as a society everyone maxing out their credit cards. Many people are using them responsibly to a point where they can reasonably expect to pay off that debt.
That's correct. And yeah, what's really the critical problem is having these very high interest rates and then having just a lot of new folks. Just over the past couple of years, there's been 100 million new credit card users, bringing the total up to about 600 million. And the fact that there's a lot of folks who have credit cards that they didn't have before, perhaps they don't necessarily know the interest rates that are so high associated with these credit cards. And, next thing you know, they're in delinquency. And hopefully, if they can get out of it, prevent bankruptcy in the long term.
Well, it seems like half of the commercials on television are superstars telling me I need a credit card. The other half are medicines I'm not sure I'll ever need and hopefully won't. And half of them, I don't even know what medicines they're for. But it seems like every other commercial now is for a credit card, and I can get points and I can get mileage and I can get cash back and I can get this and I can get that. And they make it sound like credit cards are the greatest thing ever.
And as you mentioned, it's a $1 trillion industry. And so there's really, a great reason why these folks are doing the advertising they can, just because they know that there's a market for it. However, we need to make sure that there's really a lot of protections in place to make sure is that when interest rates are being charged on these credit cards, that they're reasonable. And right now they're, again, particularly due to the high federal funds rate at the federal level. But really, again, that's been coming down as of last month. And there's, plan to continue cutting that further. But the other aspect is making sure that credit card companies themselves don't charge so much in terms of markups that really are fueling these very high interest rates as well.
Chris, thanks for calling. You're on WWL with Professor Bustamante. What's on your mind, Chris?
Hi, this is pretty much on topic. Back before the Civil War, there was a process called indenture, where young couples or singles could sign a contract with a landowner to basically be a slave for 7 years to service them. And at the end of that 7 years, they would be given a piece of property, maybe even a cabin.
Are you suggesting that we bring that back, Chris?
No, I'm suggesting we're in it now. I need a car to get back and forth to work, so I have to buy a car and pay insurance. So for 1 week every month, I work for the insurance and car loan company. The next week and a half, I work for my home. I'm enslaved to these people. I'm enslaved to them. If I want to have any kind of decent life, I have to bend to their will, pay the prices that they want. It's becoming noticeable with inflation, but if you think about it, we are indentured to these credit card companies to come back and take our home, take our automobile. It is a form of indenture, which was a form of slavery.
You know, Chris, what I found most interesting about your commentary was if you want to have any form of reasonably good life. And Professor Bustamante, I think that's where we're at now. People feel like they can't afford a good life with the money that they have, so they feel like they have to go in debt in order to get nice things in life.
And that's really a key part of, the economy right now. What really drives the American economy is consumer spending. And so by design, it's really, if it's not incomes who are driving that spending, it's definitely credit. And we will see this in the data, right? Not only do we have $1 trillion in credit card debt, but we also have $13 trillion in mortgage debt, another $1.6 trillion in car loan debt. So we really have these huge economic financial structures that are really just capturing folks in a way that it's really hard to get out of.
And it's funny you say that, because when people go to get a loan anymore, I don't think they're worried about the interest rate or the terms of how long it's going to be. All they care about is the monthly note. Can I swing that note monthly without worrying about how much debt they're really incurring, whether it's to buy a house, to buy a car, to go on a vacation, or whatever the case may be?
Yes, and you know, and there's more and millions more Americans doing that every single month, and so it's really just this bigger cycle that we're really reinforcing, where you know the consumer activity is being fueled by this credit availability. You know, there's a lot of banks who are really, again, you know, willing to charge extremely high interest rates to relatively low credit worthiness individuals, and then at the same time, it's that huge increase in consumption that is actually driving up prices to a certain extent as well.
Professor Bustamante, thank you for sharing with us today here on WWL. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Have a good one. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Newell Norman. More of your calls and texts at 504-260-1870. Coming up after this, and Coleman in Master Control has an interesting story to tell. Coleman in Master Control, you ran into some credit card problems as a young man?
Yes, I did. So as a young man, I had a credit card in the 90s, and I was one of those guys that kind of bought into the whole end of the world, Y2K, because I grew up in a religious household, so my family kept saying, oh, by the year 2000, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. Then,
so you thought you wouldn't have to worry about anything after the year 2000, it'd all be over.
Exactly, but then 24 years later, here I am. So,
you paid off that debt yet?
Yeah, I was able to pay it off. I was able to. It wasn't that much. It was just I was very irresponsible. So today, when you hear the news and there's all this fear mongering about no matter who wins the election, you know the country's going to go to crap. World War III is going to start. You know, when you have all that, I can understand why the younger generation are more like, well, screw it. If World War III is going to start, I might as well just start spending money and go to Italy and knocking it out.
One person texted us and said, it seems like people are putting more extra things outside of mortgage bills and food on credit cards due to inflation, because there really just isn't another option. Well, I will both agree and disagree with you. I agree that people are putting more what they consider necessities on credit cards now because they don't make enough money to continue to live the lifestyle that they had been living. What I will disagree about you is that there isn't any other option. The other option is you adjust your lifestyle to that now live within your new means. If inflation made your life unaffordable, you do have the choice to live a less expensive life, to live in a smaller home in maybe a less desirable area that you can afford more, to drive a car that doesn't cost as much, or take public transportation. I'm not saying there are good options. And I understand the pressure people are under, but everyone wants to live the amazing life now. Everyone wants to have the best things, but they don't want to save up for them and buy them when they can actually afford them. And I just fear this is going nowhere good and it's going to end very badly. We're going to talk to a guy who's suing the NOPD coming up after the news.